Ordinarily, if there is no specific impediment, agricultural endeavours will yield their fruits. If, however, there is a defect in the seed, or if the soil is too salty or barren, or if there is drought, plague, excessive rain or heat out of season, or if there are disturbances caused by animals, birds or insects, then agricultural activities will not yield the desired harvest. Similarly, those who are expert in analysing the material world see that the heavenly situations offered in the Vedas are not basically different from life on the earth. By the interaction of conditioned souls, there will inevitably be jealousy as one becomes distinguished as superior and another as inferior. By the power of time, these positions are reversed, and therefore violence and intrigue disturb life even on the heavenly planets. In fact, the attempt to promote oneself to the heavenly planets is itself full of problems and disturbances. One should therefore understand that the kingdom of God, of Vaikuntha, is transcendental to the limitations and disturbances imposed by the laws of material nature in this world. If one wrongly concludes that such imperfections are also present in the kingdom of God, then one will be polluted by material contamination. So, just to follow the train of thought of, to some degree anyway, of Lord Sri Krishna, who is speaking these words of wisdom to Uddhava, and ultimately, of course, Krishna is giving these instructions to us. So they're meant to be understood by us. Here, Krishna is pointing out the defects of material existence, and one who is very expert should actually perceive these defects. So that would be the sign of intelligence and expertise in going about one's activities. Which is very interesting because here Krishna, of course, is defeating the Kama Mamamsa philosophy, and their very premise is that if one is expert, then one can become happy in the material world. And Krishna is saying that one is actually expert, he will not try to be happy in the material world because it's full of defects. So, there are actually in Jayavidyama, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura teaches us that there is eternal activities of the soul, of the pure soul, and there are which is actually known as Jayavidyama or Sudha Vaishnava Dhamma, pure Vaishnava Dhamma. There are actually many persons who actually consider themselves Vaishnavas, but they don't follow Sudha Vaishnava Dhamma, they follow Vidha Vaishnava Dhamma, which is distorted or contaminated Vaishnava Dhamma. So there are actually many people who consider themselves Vaishnavas. Which sometimes can be confusing because you know you introduce to people and they say, yes, we have been initiated into Vaishnava Mantra, we are also Vaishnavas. But be careful that you are able to distinguish between the eternal activities of the soul, which is, you know, Bhagavad Dham, or Sanatana Dham, Nitya Dham, Jaya Dham, from this Vitta Vaishnava Dham, which is actually contaminated by material motivations and is not the eternal function or nature of the soul, of the pure soul. Now, he distinguishes that the pure Vaishnavas, they take initiation, just like in our society, in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we're actually following the path of Sudha Vaishnava Dhamma. And that Sudha Vaishnava Dhamma, we take initiation into the Vishnu Mantras, and the Radha Krishna Mantras, of course, and we worship Vishnu Tattva in the highest principle as Sri Sri Radha Krishna. Now others also, and that principle is one, although that principle is one, that pure path is one, there are four flavours of that Vaishnava Dhamma, which are known as Dasya Ras, Sakya Ras, Vatsalya Ras, Madhurya Ras, servantship, friendship, parental and conjugal. But they're all on the path of Sudha Vaishnava Dhamma. Now, the Vitta Vaishnava, there are two varieties. One is Kama Vitta Vaishnava Dhamma, and the other is Jnana Vitta Vaishnava Dhamma. Specifically in this chapter, Krishna is addressing those karma Vidavaishnava Vedanas, those whose they may claim to be Vaishnavas, but they're actually contaminated. Their devotional service, the worship of the Lord, is contaminated by the philosophy of fruitive activities. We call them the smarter Brahmanas, or the orthodox Brahmanas, or the Karma Mimamsas as well. They take initiation into Vaishnava mantra. They worship Lord Vishnu, but as described in the philosophy of Karma Mimamsa, they actually see Lord Vishnu as a component of karma. That's the difference. They see the higher principle being the laws of karma. And that even God is under those laws. The other branch of distorted Vaishnavism is the Gyan Vida Vaishnava Dham, and they're attracted to the Brahman, and in order to attain the impersonal Brahman, they also worship the Pancha Prasana, sun god, Ganesh, Shakti, Shiva, and Vishnu. So they also worship Vishnu. Sometimes they even worship Radha Krishna. And they take initiation, and they're known as Vaishnavas. But the difference there, of course, is that they say when one attains full knowledge, full realization, which is at the time of the realization of Brahman, you then reject that worship of Lord Vishnu, of all worship. You reject all that worship. So those Vaishnavas, or even non-Vaishnavas who follow the path of karma, they reject the worship of God in the sense that, why worship God? Do your work, because the law of karma is supreme. They're attracted to the Paramatma, or the Super Soul Teacher. As we said, the Jnana, those who are contaminated by the Jnana, they're attracted, they veer towards the impersonal Brahman. Whereas those who follow the path of the Karma, they're actually attracted towards Vishnu, the Super Soul. It's just that their understanding of the Super Soul, of Vishnu Tattva, is not complete. Thinking that Vishnu is also influenced or covered by, although he's very, very powerful presiding deity, it was not different from the mantras, they still believe he was covered by material qualities. And the yogis, or the Ashtangi yogis, are really, they're on that path of karma as well. They're also attracted towards Vishnu. On a different level. They're also trying to enjoy the fruits of the material world through worship of Vishnu by attaining powers which also, allow them to go to higher heavenly planets and to develop very, great powers for enjoying the material world. But they can, all of them are following religious practices which are motivated by some material principle, and therefore it's not the eternal activity of the soul. As soon as there's a material motivation, we can't say that that's the eternal activity of the pure spiritual soul. So those in parts of even Vaishnavas are contaminated by the strongly by the pursuing food activities. They want to enjoy the facilities of the material world, go to the heavenly planets, and they may try and even do that through the Sangha Yoga and develop mystic cities and what have you. The Jnanis, their material motivation is in the negative, is that they're trying to counteract the miseries of material existence, which is another material motivation actually. It's just the flip side of the same coin. So they're all, none of them can be considered Jayadam, Sanatadam, Bhagavatam, worship of the Supreme Person, because they're, there's some material motivation. So one should very carefully distinguish, as Krishna is teaching Uddhava here to do, between the Vaishnavas, such as those following the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and following, and who's strictly teaching the teaching of Krishna, and others who also say, yes, I am Vaishnava, yes, in our family we have taken Vaishnava, we have the Vaishnava mantra and what have you. That actually, they can be very, very strongly contaminated by desire for fruit of activities, karma, or jnana activities, the pursuit of empiric knowledge. So, in this way, we actually follow Śrīla Vyāsadeva. Śrīla Vyāsadeva teaches this, pure knowledge, especially in Śrīmad Bhagavatam. Krishna described in this chapter, Śrīmad Bhagavatam, compiled by Śrīla Vyāsadeva, inspired by Lord Sri Krishna. Krishna describes that by pure knowledge one can get out of illusion, and by getting out of illusion take up the activities of the pure soul. That's just like if one is asleep, one may think, I have so many things to do. Just like sometimes you have a dream and someone is chasing you, and you're running, and you wake up and you still think, oh, I've got to run, and you think, it's just a dream, I don't have to run, I don't have to do anything. I have my activities, and I'd actually forgotten what my real activities are. Here I'm thinking I have so many things to do because I was dreaming. So one comes to the platform of knowledge, and one realises one's real activities. So in the same way, Srimad Bhagavatam is describing by transcendental knowledge received through the parampara from Krishna, through Śrīla Vyāsadeva, through the gurus, the acharyas now through Śrīla Prabhupāda. We can actually wake up from the illusion and dismiss all the other activities contaminated by desire for fruit of activities or empiric knowledge, and we can take up the activities of the pure soul. Whereas Jnani, his teachings of the Kama Mamsa, they're different. They're actually strongly influenced by the Kama Mamsa philosophy. However, we should always be very, very careful to just write these great sages off as somehow being deviants or what have you. Even the slightest association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his devotees ultimately will bear fruits. And we see actually in the life of Jnani, In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna glorifies Jnani indirectly. We say every morning, Samavita Bhaktivinoda. All glories to the Samavita. All glories to the Samavita. Because the Samavita amongst the original Vedas is actually, it has the strongest devotional teachings sure the Upper Day understand the mood of Jamie, that there was, you know, some devotional inclination there, gave him charge of the Sanghavina. And therefore we see in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, Krishna also shares amongst the Vedas and the Sanghavina. So, you know, there is certainly that devotional position. Jamie's philosophy on Karma Mimamsa was written perhaps not in his maturity, but at the same time it was to give the Brahmanas, who are heavily inclined towards fruitive activities, an opportunity to become purified and gradually rise to the position of devotional service. In much the same way we see that Lord Buddha acted, that, you know, in a roundabout way, he's trying to give people shelter. Ultimately, the long-term purpose is to bring them to Krishna consciousness, at least stop them from going further and further away from the path of Krishna consciousness. But we actually see that the Brihad Bhagavatamrita was spoken by Jomini to Jamanjaya. That was when it was spoken for the first time. And the Brihad Bhagavatamrita is actually, as the very name suggests, it's the, you know, very essence of, you know, the teachings of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Sukadeva Goswami had spoken to Parikh Maharaj, the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, Parikh Maharaj was sitting and, you know, literally the hour of death had come. But his mother, Uttara, she approached him at that time in a secluded place. She certainly wanted to see her son, but she also wanted to hear, you know, what did Sukadeva Goswami say? You know, what's the essence of the Bhagavatam? And, you know, so that, he actually spoke this Brihad Bhagavatam to his mother, and then that was spoken again by Jaini to Jamanajaya. Jamanajaya, actually, Jaini had spoken the Mahabharata, not the Vyasadeva's Mahabharata. Actually, in the Vyasadeva's Mahabharata, he does mention that there are other histories of the Mahabharata, one of which was Jaimini's. Again, Srila Vyasadeva, he wrote the Mahabharata, but he wrote it in such a way as to appeal to a wide audience. So he didn't accentuate, highlight the you know, Sri Krishna as the principal personality, and he didn't, you know, highlight devotional service to the greater extent. But in Jaimini's Mahabharata he did, and Jamanajaya was so taken by that description of the Mahabharata that he asked more. So therefore Jaimini spoke the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, which is his supplement to the his Mahabharata, just as the Harivamsa is a supplement to Sri Vyasadeva's Mahabharata. So generally, you know, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, if we you know, hear of Jaimini, you know, it's understood that those teachings, he did, you know, it's usually stated he did not know the real philosophy, and, you know, there was illusion there and what have you. But at the same time, we should also understand that the activities of the various sages who participated in the pastimes of Krishna Leela, it's not that they remain static on the one platform. And we should always remember that about any devotee, actually, that, you know, devotees, by Krishna's arrangement, because they're actually under the shelter of Krishna's spiritual potency, they don't remain static. They're always, you know, increasing in their transmitter realization and their purity of their love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So even in the case of Jaimini, we see that. But generally when we refer to those teachings, it's especially the followers, more so than Jaimini, it's the followers of his philosophy who are, you know, particularly bewildered. Because, you know, they neglect any, they're so strongly materially motivated that even if there are some statements by Jaimini, or, you know, Patanjali in his philosophy, or, you know, Gautama in his philosophy, or even Shankaracharya in his philosophy, even if there is some praise of Lord Sri Krishna and devotional service to Bhagavad Gita, they neglect it. We see this with many, you know, religious processes. Although the, you know, the teachers such as Lord Jesus and Muhammad, you know, they had their, you know, very wonderful teachings. But as Srila Prabhupada coined the phrase, the followers always bungle everything. So that's quite often the case. So, but here, but generally the philosophy of Jaimini is this Kama Mimamsa. By transcendental knowledge, which comes through the Srimad Bhagavatam and such literatures like the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, one can, you know, come to the perfect knowledge of one's real eternal activities on the platform of the pure soul. So, Krishna here is teaching that one must, in all his teachings, one must rise above materially motivated moral principles, materially motivated ritualistic activities, religious activities, materially motivated philosophy. One actually has to rise above that. If one doesn't rise above that, the problem is that people take to mundane morality, mundane principles of religion, mundane philosophy, and therefore they think, I'm very satisfied with this. This is sufficient. What need do I have to search out after the absolute truth? You'll find that amongst all of them. You know, they feel, yes, I have my mundane principles of this, that and the other. What need do I have for, you know, this transcendental God? The you know, the Kama Mimamsas, they will think, why worship God? They all actually, to some degree or another, they all think like this: why worship God? Why give him any credit? If we do our work properly, we work well, we will get a result. And we will enjoy that result. We're very expert, very good, follow our principles of morality, and what have you, and goodness, we will get the result. So, why give any credit to God? We've done the work. Of course, the same people you generally find, as soon as something goes wrong, God's fault. actually, there's even a verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, somewhere in the sixth canto, that I forget who was speaking, but he's actually saying, even if you convince me that there is a God, why should I worship such a foolish God, you know, that causes so much trouble? So if something goes wrong, that's God's fault. If something goes right, I have done such a good job. So, you know, they think, why worship God? If there is a God, I've done my work, he must give me the results. Because he, you know, he's obliged to do it. Of course, that may be true with the demigods, to some extent, but it's certainly not true with Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is not under the laws of material energy. So it is true to some extent. Just like, you know, if you If you use electricity, just like we have electricity burning here, if we don't pay the bills, you don't get electricity. You pay the bill, you get electricity. You can sit here, we can have bubbly dump cards. We don't have to go and offer puja to the people at the electric company. You know, once a week, we go to an army tray, puja, you know. We just pay the bill, send it in the mail. We don't even have to speak to them. So that's their philosophy. With regards to the demigods, that may be true, but it stops short there. They apply that to the transcendental personality of Godhead as well, and that doesn't work. Because he is not obliged to anything or anyone. He is the law maker. He is not in, he is not under the laws. And he showed that in many, many different ways. You see that in his appearance as Lord Ram. Krishna wanted to, Ram wanted to cross the ocean, and so he built a bridge, big boulders, and they just floated. So if he wants that the law, you know, of gravity, that the rocks, boulders should float, and they will float because he is the controller of that law. We see that Krishna, he lifted Gopi down the hill, although he was 7 years old. He lifted Gopi down the hill with his little finger on the left hand, held it there for 7 days. He is beyond the laws of material nature, but they have that philosophy. Why worship God? The Jnanis had the same philosophy. We see that the modern Jnani is the scientist. Again, why worship God? You work within the laws of the material energy. You very expertly utilize those laws, and you can get your good results like that. So, they are modern Jnanis, or other Jnanis who see the defects of material existence, they may say give up work or activity altogether. But still, why worship God? Just give up work, give up activity. That's why I see it fix the problem. There's no need to worship God. And the yogi is very similar to the scientists, in the sense that they just use more subtle laws of the material energy, but for really the worship of God is to attain those laws. Having attained those laws, perfection of the control of those laws of the material energy, very subtle. They have the mystic cities, they can travel to the heavenly planets and what have you. So, apart from that, there's really no need to, worship the Supreme Lord. So they all have that motivation. Generally, as you go throughout the world. But, people will worship God if there's some difficulty. They'll worship him as the order supplier. Otherwise, there's no need. Prabhupada gives the example that during the Second World War, he heard from one of his friends that many, many women, literally, all of them praying, you bring my son home, you bring my husband home, you bring my father home, like this. And of course, when they didn't come home, they become atheists en masse. If God is the order supplier, if he's not supplying, why worship him? So that's the mentality here, materially motivated religions. And so the Jnanis, the Yogis, the Materialists, the Karmis, they all have the tendency that why worship God? There's no real need. And therefore, they're satisfied with their mundane morality, mundane religious rituals, mundane philosophy, and being satisfied with that and satisfied with the various results you're getting in wider worship of God. So Krishna is saying, but actually if you, you know, by that process, you'll never attain the absolute truth. You'll actually never attain the transcendental personality of Godhead. So you must rise above that. If you don't rise above that platform, you can never even attain the desire, let alone attain, practically, the absolute truth or the transcendental kingdom of God and association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the danger there. Therefore, we see in Krishna's teachings with Arjuna, in the Bhagavad Gita, in the Battle of Kurukshetra, that Krishna, he spoke to Arjuna, and Arjuna was sticking to his mundane principles of morality. No, I shall not fight. You know, and he gave so many reasons why, you know, this is immoral and this is, you know, all mundane. Motivated by the typical sort of arguments that you'll hear in the material world. But then when he actually understood that in order to attain the transcendental platform and to attain the absolute platform of morality, he actually had to take up Krishna's instructions. So we have to ask ourselves, you know, similarly with Yudhisthira, Krishna pushed him also, you know, to give up his mundane morality. During the Battle of Kurukshetra, he asked him to tell a lie. And Yudhisthira, I've never told a lie in my life, and I never will. Not even to you, Krishna. And he wouldn't tell a lie. Of course, what happens if he tells a lie, then, you know, you lose all your pious credits. You know, which is promotion of the heavenly planets and, you know, what have you. And protection from, you know, suffering in the material world. It's personally motivated. Because Yudhisthira and Arjuna, eternal devotees of the Lord, Krishna has these pastimes with his pure devotees, giving them instruction. They enjoy this wonderful pastime with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They enjoy his personal association, and they receive instruction which is actually meant for our benefit. We shouldn't think that they're, you know, conditioned souls. But Krishna, you see, in all these activities, he's, you know, we see with the gopis also, you know, that he pushed them to give up the, you know, mundane standards of morality and dharma and religion, and to totally surrender to the absolute platform. Now, of course, most people will think of Krishna's activities that, you know, he's teaching them to be immoral. You know, he's teaching people to be, to go against religious principles. He's a rascal, he's a debauchee. They don't understand that actually he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he is teaching real morality. Real morality is actually obedience to God. Anything else is immoral. Even in the name of goodness in the material world, if we actually go against the wishes of God, how can that be moral? And actually, to go against the wishes of God means that it is the ultimate in pride. My intelligence is better than God. He's asking me to do something, but I know that there's something better to do because I'm so, you know, I'm really with it, really turned on, very expert. But actually, you know, it is really an exhibition in pride, and it's a mundane standard of morality. The real platform of morality is obedience to the laws of the Supreme, and that's what Krishna is trying to explain. Srila Prabhupada explains that we actually see that even in a in a practical way, that if you get if the state asks if someone kills, just like in Hastings the other day, someone stabs someone, you know, he's been charged with murder. So in many places, everywhere he'll be punished. Some he'll be executed, some he'll, you know, spend most of his life in prison, but he'll be punished. He killed someone. Now, the same government, if they ask that same person to go overseas and to fight in a war which they deem necessary, then he will come back and he will get a medal. Just like one of the last remaining Victoria Cross, someone who won the Victoria Cross, I think it was the Second World War. And that they were under intense gunfire from the enemy. And the enemy was literally going to kill them all. So he just stood up and they were just shooting at him. Bullets were going through his clothing somehow or another. And he just, you know, he had to stand up to, you know, take these guys out. He stood up and took them out. You know. And all of his friends, they say to this day, that, you know, had he not done that, we'd all be dead. So he, you know, he's a hero. I was thinking about that, and you know, for the rest of his life, of course, he's, you know, he has this VC Victoria Cross, you know, the highest medal of honour. I was actually thinking about some of the Sankirtan devotees, you know, who face death and danger. You know, even in our movement today, in some of the places they preach, constantly they should be getting a Victoria Cross every day, every time they go out. But these people, they do something once and that's it. You're a hero. One day they will recognise, you know, the real, really brave devotees who are preaching in some different parts of the world. But anyway, the point being that, you know, same person, the principle is you obey the state. If you do, you're rewarded. If you don't, you're punished. And that is the standard of morality. If, and if thieving, again, thieving, people go out and, you know, they'll take a loaf of bread and they get caught, then they have to be punished. In some places, you know, they used to chop off their hand. They, you know, one person, they chop off his hand, no one else would steal in that place. Because these days you get a little slap on the wrist and everyone thinks, oh, I'm going to take up stealing, you know. There's no problem. But if someone steals, they get punished. If the government says, you steal from me, you become a spy, you go over to this country, just like there's an Australian over in China at the moment. So he's been captured by the Chinese government. Oh, you were a spy. Yeah, we were punished. If someone's asked to steal by the government and they don't do what the government says, then they're a traitor. And they'll be punished for not doing what the government says as well. So similarly, literally everyone in the material world is being punished for being a traitor by disobedience to the supreme will of the personality of Godhead. And that is the ultimate principle of morality. And we, you know, people may, you know, scream and shout, oh, you know, how can you say that? But we follow the same principle. Obedience to the state. Sometimes you kill, sometimes you don't, but the principle is obedience to that law of the state. It's the same principle. The only difference is that we are obedient to the highest authority, but it's the same principle. Therefore they can't say that it's immoral. So in this way Krishna actually pushes teaches to, you must rise above these mundane principles of morality, ritual, philosophy, in order to attain the personality of Godhead. It's not good enough to be a moral prisoner in the material world. Right? Just like, you know, in prison, one may say, I'm in prison. I'm very, very expert. I know how to, you know, do the right thing by everyone. Become a good prisoner. The guards like me. The other prisoners, you know, they don't give me too much trouble. You know, if I just keep going like this, very, very expert, I can remain here in prison and be very, very happy. But see, the state doesn't want them to be a model prisoner. That's good. That's wonderful. It's better than being a rascal prisoner. You know, they're always having to beat up with their truncheons, but you know, it's a lot of hard work. But they don't want them to be model prisoners forever. They actually want them to go above that and to be a citizen amongst non-criminals. In the same way, Krishna is teaching, I don't want you to be expert at being, you know, a mundane moralist and ritualistic performer and mundane philosopher in the material world. I want you to live in the spiritual world with people who don't have any of these selfishly motivated activities. Okay. So these here, therefore Krishna is, you know, pointing out the various defects of material existence in the same way that, you know, in a prison, you know, they will point out, you know, you're doing very well, you're a modern prisoner, but don't get comfortable, you know. You can't be happy in prison. There's always, you know, you're not, you know, independent in being happy. There's always the laws of the prison. You know, there's only there's a very limited degree of happiness because there's a supreme limiting factor within the prison. In the same way, Krishna explained that within the material world, you can't actually just be happy as you like because there is a supreme authority above you which is limiting the degree of happiness. It is the very nature of this material world which is under the influence of time, and under the influence of time there will always be birth, death, old age and disease. Apart from that, even if you think even if you're very, very expert, you cannot overcome that supreme influence. And you have to understand that, you know, there are many other factors involved causing suffering and misery. Just like even if you do become very expert, even if you play, you know, you understand, yes, there's the supreme authority that overrides my destiny, but even if I'm expert within that, I'll be happy. No. Because there are so many other factors. And the other thing, of course, is you know, one's limited sense of what is good, you know, will also, one's understanding of what is expert is can be tainted, limited, and you can cause yourself some problems. So in various ways like this, here Krishna is pointing out that even if you go to the heavenly planets, you know, then you've got the other inmates of the material world. And just like, you know, you go to a really good part of the prison, you go from H block to A block, you think, oh, now I've got an A. You're still surrounded by prisoners, you know. Thieves and rogues and rapists and, you don't want to be in that situation. That's what Krishna is saying here. Anywhere you go, you know, there's jealousy, there's envy, there's decay, there's death. You know. Okay. So this way, Krishna is pointing out the defects of our so-called expertise of being an inmate in the material world, and you know, even thinking that yes, somehow or another, you know, I'll get by. The world is just full of so many problems from, you know, anywhere we go. So therefore, Krishna pointing out these defects. In other words, you cannot achieve perfection or happiness through this process of karma, even, you know, this karma, vidya vaishnava dham. Therefore, it is better to take up the pure activities of rise above mundane principles and search out the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Search out the spiritual world and search out your eternal activities. And they are described here in, you know, Srimad Bhagavatam very nicely. So the next verses, I won't go into them too much, but they actually describe, there's a description of what happens, how you go to the heavenly planets and the problems you have and then falling down, what have you. And that's also described in the Bhagavad Gita in the 9th chapter, in verse 21. Krishna describes how when the results of your pious activities have been exhausted, then you come again back into this cycle of birth and death. So really, for all one's endeavours, to get to the heavenly planets, at the end, you just end up in the same cycle of birth and death. That's the result. So Krishna is saying. But the next slide is very interesting. In text number 22, Krishna says, but my devotees, who are always thinking of me, always meditating upon me, for them I carry what they lack and preserve what they have. So Krishna is saying that, because people would look at the devotees following the path of totally surrendering to Krishna, not searching out their own material happiness through karma, jnana and yoga, whatever. And they'll say, you'll not enjoy anything in this material world and you have no, real guarantee of going to the spiritual world. So Krishna speaks that verse. Oh yes, oh, that's okay. I give the insurance that I will personally, look after my devotees. They're not trying to go to the heavenly planets, but don't think they won't be happy because I will look after them personally. There's actually a story by Arjuna Charya within the Jamuna Charya Sampradaya, where Arjuna Charya was commenting on this verse of the Bhagavad Gita. And as he was reading that verse, he said, I personally carry, what they lack. And he was thinking, that's not right. Krishna personally comes and, carries. He crossed that out with some red ink. Vahamyam. No, we'll cross that out. We'll put Karomi, I'll get it done, something like that. I'll send some agent. It will happen. Christian person going to come. So he crossed that out, and then he went out as usual to do his he would collect charity and alms and what have you. So while he was out, two boys came to his house, and his wife greeted them, and they looked very, very anxious, and they were carrying they had to carry like a bamboo rod and cloth, and so they had so much food, and she was amazed, and they said, we're servants, disciples of Arjuna Chara. He has sent us here, and we'll leave these here, but we have to go very quickly before he comes home, because he's very angry at us. We didn't think we could, there was some delay and a very heavy burden, but he made us sleep, we had to come now, we had to go. And she's thinking, and she's asking, I don't know that he is so angry and mean. And one of the boys showed, look at my back, and he showed the back, and there's these scratch marks, and he's been beaten like this, it's all red. And so his wife was amazed, and she said, you come in, and so she prepared some food and what have you. Anyway, they disappeared. Meanwhile, her husband came home. When he came home, he saw that his wife was already eating. And she's sitting there eating all this sumptuous food. Of course, in that Vedic system, the custom is that the wife should actually cook, prepare for the husband. She would feed the whole family and then she would leave. So he was, why are you acting so inappropriate? And she said, why did you act so inappropriate? These boys came here, and then she discovered that they disappeared, and you had treated them very harshly, made them carry a big burden, and I saw the beak and scratch marks on the back. And she said, I don't know. And she described what the boys looked like. So he went in to study, after some time he went in to study about a year, and he noticed that when he read that verse, the verse was intact again. That, again, he said, yes, I carried what they like, the red marks, said, like this. And then he realized, that he remembered the description, that one was black, this one was white. And the Krishna Balaram had actually come, and, in order to, prove the truth of Krishna's teachings, they personally come at this. And those marks on his back is where I've scratched his body in the form of the back of the deer. So he felt very, very ashamed. And he also felt, great admiration for his wife, that she had the opportunity to see Krishna at Balaram. So, Krishna said that the devotee, they don't have to be fearful for their happiness. They're not following the path of karma, they're not following the path of jnana or Ashtanga yoga, but Krishna says, don't think that they miss out on anything. And don't think that they will not go back to the transcendental world, because I will, at every step, carry what they lack, preserve what they have, and I will make sure they get to the spiritual world. And when they get to the spiritual world, I'll make sure that they remain there like that. That is Krishna's promise. So very, very, very wonderful. Srila Prabhupada, in his practical application of that philosophy, one time he was on a morning walk, and one of his disciples was mentioning how someone he met was saying that if you work very, very hard, you'll become happy, and that's sufficient why worship God. And so the Prabhupada said, well, the ash is also working very hard. Is God satisfied with him? We see. So the ash working very, very hard. Does that mean that, God is looking at this? Yes, I pray to him. And another disciple mentioned how they had just purchased this building in Boston or something like that, and someone came up to them, a devotee, and said, I saw you dancing and chanting on the street just a couple of days ago, and now I see you going into the most expensive building, on the most expensive block in this whole city. And, all I see is, you're chanting and dancing, now I see you going into this. How is that? And Prabhupada said, you should tell them that, we work for Krishna and Krishna sends the money. And he said, the problem is that they don't see the mercy of Krishna. That's what people fail to see about the Hare Krishna movement. He even gave the example, Prabhupada actually went on with the conversation, he was saying how, people can be deluded, and also this question sometimes of envy, that his own godbrothers, he was referring to Tirtha Maharaj, who was the head of the Gaudiya Mutt at that stage, he was saying that the American government had given Prabhupada, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars, and that's how we spread Krishna consciousness throughout the world. That's about it. So Prabhupada was saying, see the end. Even those who follow spiritual practice. Oh, that's how the end. It's not Krishna's mercy, it's not Bhagavad Gita 9:22, being played out of the American governments. So another quite often reporters also, they would approach to the Prabhupada and they'd all go, where do you get the money? One report asked, where do you get your money to print BTG, so much money? And Prabhupada said, God sends it. And he laughed. And the reporter said, yeah, but I'm sure God doesn't come and write out the checks. And Prabhupada said, no, God dictates And you, babe. you know, in so many different ways. But, you know, this is the teaching of Bhagavad Krishna, that, you know, there's no need to follow these paths of karma, yama, yoga, you know. One is, you can't be happy in material existence, nor merging in the Brahman. They're all full of defects. Two, you'll never attain the absolute truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And give up those processes, and if you give them up, don't think that you won't achieve perfection, because I will personally look after you. So I always should go up since you're out of the keys. Probably a couple of minutes, any quick questions or comments?